Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be teaching you the purpose of forgiveness. I'll also be interviewing Marcia Barth, who shares her incredible story of overcoming childhood sexual abuse and teaches people how to thrive instead of survive. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My latest album, Restoration, was just released. Restoration is a continuation of the first album, Consolation. I like to think of these albums like books. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And like in any story, the character goes from a sense of grief and loss, and at the end of Consolation, finds hope for his future. In Restoration, he has an awakening. And in that awakening, he recognizes all the things in his life which are not healthy. And it helps him come to a place of restoration, becoming greater than he was before. You may purchase this album on iTunes or any other digital music store. The name of the album is Restoration, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled Restoration. A teacher once told each of her students to bring a clear plastic bag and a sack of potatoes to school. For every person they refused to forgive in their life, they had to choose a potato, write the person's name and the date of the offense on it, and put it in the plastic bag. Some of their bags were quite heavy. They were then told to carry this bag with them everywhere for 1 week, putting it beside their bed at night, on the passenger seat when driving, next to their desks at work, and even when they were out with their friends. The hassle of lugging this around with them made it clear what a burdensome weight they were carrying and how it affected them emotionally, physically, and spiritually. Naturally, the condition of the potatoes deteriorated to a nasty, smelly slime. What a great metaphor. Too often we think of forgiveness as a gift to the other person, when in reality, it's clearly for ourselves. Understanding the purpose of forgiveness. In last week's episode, I discussed the importance of expressing one's emotions. I shared how your emotions are linked with your body, and when you hold on to certain emotions, it actually causes health risks within your body. And in today's episode, I wanted to speak about forgiveness itself. We all have different ideas what forgiveness is. There are many things that happen in our day. It could be for something that's very small, like someone bumps into you by accident and you forgive them, or it could be something incredibly traumatic that happens to you. However, the concept of forgiveness is the same thing. Of course, it depends on how traumatized we are from the event to determine the level of forgiveness that we have to demonstrate. One thing I'd really like to make clear is forgiveness is the last stage of the healing process. My guest today will explain her version of what those steps are, but I wanted you to understand that when I'm talking about forgiveness, I'm talking about the end stage of the healing process for that person. So once you go through the healing process, if that's through talking through the therapist, talking to your friends, whatever that might be, the last stage of your healing process is going to be forgiveness. We all have a choice. Forgiveness is an active choice. It's not something we do one time and then the event is over. Forgiveness is an active mindset that we have to create in order to move on. What I often tell people is this: forgiveness is not accepting what's happened to you. Forgiveness, it's really releasing yourself from all the emotion and the mental trap that enslaves you. And what I mean by that is this. Anytime something happens to us, and once again, the more traumatic it is, the more it's going to be in the forefront of our mind, or it's going to be the foundation for our life. If something happens to me, I have to make a choice, and it doesn't mean it has to be right that second, but eventually I will have to come to a decision to say, do I let this situation or this person have control over my life, or do I want to become that person that I was destined to be? When we forgive someone, it is not excusing the person from what they've done. What it does is it simply removes the power from our mind and our body. It gives us back the power we need to live a successful life. For example, what happens if somebody does something to you and you never see them again, but it was something that was very traumatic to you? You never see them again. You'll never get a chance to tell them what you feel. You'll never get a chance to express to them all the pain and heartache that they've done to you. And then what? It's the same type of thing when it comes to closure. I actually wrote a magazine article about that, and it's called I Need Closure. And you can go to my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com, and read about that. But forgiveness is the same type of thing as closure. It is something we give ourselves. There's nothing that anybody else can do. Yes, people can say how sorry they are, how they shouldn't have done this, or they should not have done that. But the point is, that's when it becomes an active choice. We can then choose to forgive someone, or we can choose not to. But it's a mentality that we choose to have in order to set ourselves free. Just because you forgive someone does not mean that justice will not be served. Once again, it simply means it removes the power and the chains of oppression on yourself and allows you to experience life in a healthier way. Did you know that there are physical consequences for not forgiving people? That bitterness and that resentment that we can continually feel can do many things to us. It can weaken your immune system. Remember in last week's podcast, I discussed the importance of emotions and the expression of them. And it's the same type of thing. When we hold on to the bitterness, when the resentment, it causes all of these stress hormones in our body, which then weakens our immune system overall. It can also decrease one's beauty. Think about it. If something continually keeps you up at night and it's all you think about, when you don't have sleep, it's going to affect the way you look. It's going to affect the way you feel. It's going to affect everything about you. Sleep is one of the most important things we can do for ourselves. But when we're so caught up and consumed with what someone has done, and once again, it can be one of the most traumatic things someone has done to us, or it could be something that's very basic. But the point is, when it consumes our mind, it's going to cause us not to be able to sleep. And when we can't sleep, we're going to look tired. We're going to get bags under our eyes. There's also mental and emotional consequences that come along with it as well. There's depression. As we all know, depression, it's a very powerful state of your mind and your emotions, which causes you to lose interest in those things which are healthy for you. It causes you to lose your motivation. It causes you to sometimes sleep all day, sometimes overeat. There are many ways in which depression can manifest itself in our life, as well as stress. For example, cortisol. Cortisol is one of those stress hormones that the longer we have it in our body, the more it stores all the fat in our body and doesn't allow for us to lose weight. It causes our body to feel as if it's on high alert. And so it really messes with many, many areas of our life. So I really want you to understand today, forgiveness is allowing yourself to be set free from the bondage of the situation and what that person has done to you. Because the longer you hold on to it, you are going to be consumed with that situation. There are many times when people don't even realize what they've done, and that's probably one of the most minimizing things we can experience. Because for us, it's so powerful, it's so overwhelming, it's so painful. But when we look at that other person, they're living their own life. They're doing whatever they want to do, but we're the one who's hurting. So that's a really important thing to remember. We continually hurt ourselves when we hold on to that bitterness and that resentment. And in doing that, we're not going to be able to enjoy life around us. Forgiveness is removing the power of the event and of the person who inflicted on us and giving ourselves the release to let go. Now, when you forgive someone, it does not mean they have to be in your life. It does not mean that you have to be their friend. It does not mean that you even have to see them again. The point is, you are allowing yourself to live again. You are allowing yourself to love again. You are allowing yourself to be you again. You may have lost many, many things in the event that took place, but it's now up to you to decide to forgive. It's up to you to give yourself the permission to live a very successful, healthy life again. This is something you deserve. You deserve happiness. You deserve joy. You deserve peace. But the only way to get that is to forgive the person that inflicted that on you. Once again, that does not mean you excuse the person of what they've done, does not mean you have to see them again. It just simply allows the situation not to have any more power over you. And now, a quick word from my sponsor. Audible.com is offering you, my listener, a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader, so this is a no-brainer for me to go ahead and download any audiobook I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog, at the gym, or just even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/JamesMillerLifeology. They have over 180,000 books for you to choose from, so I'm pretty confident you'll find the one you're looking for. So check it out today. Marsha Barth is an author and an advocate for individuals who have experienced sexual abuse. She has been a public speaker for over 20 years and is going to share her own inspirational story of the power of love, the promise of hope, and the inspiration of knowing that what has happened to you does not define who you are. Welcome to my show, Marsha.
Thank you for having me on, James. It's a pleasure.
Yes, it definitely is a pleasure for me as well. Now, when I originally read the email that you had sent me, at first I was uncertain of what to think because your story is so powerful. And I think it's a topic that many people just don't discuss. For whatever reason, there's a lot of shame and guilt that may be linked with the topic of sexual abuse. But I was so inspired by your desire to talk about this, to shed light on it, to give hope for people who may have experienced something like this. Would you be willing to share your story with my listeners?
I would be honored to share it because the goal is to help. It's estimated that there are 60 million survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And when I talk at venues and book signings, go into the prisons, colleges, what I try to explain to people that this is something that can no longer be hidden because every single person is going to be impacted by it in some way, whether it be a coworker, whether it be a neighbor, whether it be someone that they love, somewhere someone is going to be impacted because you cannot have 60 million survivors. And that's a low estimate, I believe, sure, because the statistics are really askew because we know that only 1 in 4, they estimate, girls and 1 in 6 boys are sexually abused in America. But that's based on a 40% report rate. So you almost have to double those numbers. Mm-hmm. And then on top of it, children under 12, it's estimated that only 10% are ever reported.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea that the statistics were that high.
And it's estimated that there's 90,000 children under 12 that are sexually abused a year, but that's based on a 10% report.
Oh my gosh.
That's why I speak.
Yes. And you do instill hope in the people who listen.
Well, without hope, we just become what most people call a survivor, mm-hmm, if you make it to the survivor stage. But surviving is just existing. Why not go from victim to victor?
I like that. I like that reframe. I think that's so powerful on so many levels. How did your own story come about?
Well, when I was about 4 years old, my grandfather, which was my father's dad, sexually abused me, but nothing was ever done about that. Now, my father started abusing me when I was 7, 8 years old. My mom and him had separated. They had had trouble. They were married 13 years, and my dad had had affairs on her. To give you a little history, just for a minute, sure. I'm not that old, but I was raised in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. West Virginia is almost heaven. It really is, like the song says. My family was great. People must not misunderstand. I had wonderful grandmothers. I had wonderful aunts and uncles, and I adore my mom. My mom is still living, and she's wonderful. She's 82. She still pictures double ring or horseshoes.
Oh my goodness, that's great.
My
feisty.
Mom is. Yeah, she is. She was 19 when she had me, but I was the fourth child. So when I was born, I had a brother 3 years old, 2 years old, 1 year old, and
Born. Wow.
We lived in a 3-room house that was not HGTV approved. It had 3 rooms, not 3 bedrooms.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And we walked 150 foot to the bathroom. And in case anyone didn't get that, that's an outhouse.
Okay.
We walked another 150 foot to the horseshoe pegs. And if you walked another 150 foot, you stopped because it was the cliff that was straight down.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So we learned not to chase the ball after the horseshoe pegs.
Yes.
Now, my brothers were my heroes. We grew up to this day. We can be in a room and my sister-in-law says a whole conversation goes on and a word's not said. We're just that close.
Oh,
and
that's wonderful.
No one knew about my abuse, though. I didn't tell anyone until I was engaged to be married to my husband, who has been my husband for 42 years.
Oh, that's amazing, Marcia. That's wonderful.
The thing is that abuse does shatter. You ask how it affects you. It shatters your trust, your hope, your identity, mm-hmm, everything that you were made and purposed to be by God is shattered in a million pieces.
Yeah.
And as a child, you do not know how to get that back. Actually, sometimes you don't even know what you've lost. Mm-hmm. All they're aware of is that it doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not to throw statistics out there, but people have to have the statistics for a little bit of awareness. 93% of all victims know they're attackers.
Mm.
It's only 7% when we warn our children about the strangers and touch and this and that. We're only warning them of 7%. And that's another thing I try to really advocate strong about, that you have to understand, like I can say personally, I mean, you can look at statistics, but I can say personally from the venues I've been at and talked, I have had people come up to me and say, it was my uncle, it was my older brother, It was my sister. It was my mother. It was my father. It was my uncle. It was my babysitter. It was my coach. It was my church counselor. And I could go on and on. That's the other thing people have to understand. We have to talk about these issues, because if people are not careful, they have this mentality that that'll never happen to my family. I've told my children about it, and they would come to me. I had a mother 6 weeks ago tell me, "Marty, I read your book." She said, "I always thought my children would come tell me if anything happened." I think they're about 8 and 10. She said, "But after reading your book, I really don't know if they would," because she understood why the children do not speak up. And so parents of good families alike have to understand that perpetrators themselves infiltrated almost every area of our life that we deal with. And probably one of the most alarming statistics is that 1/3 of offenders now are juveniles themselves. That's a scary thought.
That is, yes.
I'm not trying to express fear or trepidation and say, "Well, Marty, you act like you can't trust anyone." I'm saying you need to have the awareness and the mindfulness to be watchful, because what is done is not easily undone. For example, when I was going through the abuse, probably at almost its worst, it started like third grade and continued to escalate. And I would wake up and my father would sneak into my room. I can remember as a child laying in bed and listening for his knees coming up the steps. And you always wonder, is he going to go into the bathroom or is he going to try to sneak into my room? And so the terror and the fear, and these things affect you, and they affect your identity. Now, I was always a good student in school, and I just felt that if I worked really hard, I would get scholarship and go to college. But no one in our family, a lot had not even finished high school, so it was a big dream. And I can remember being in fifth grade and wanting to play with the girls, and they said, "We're not playing with you." Now, these were two girls that were friends of mine. Mm-hmm. I went to Sunday school with them. We lived in a little town, a little valley, so I knew their families. Unfortunately, in some ways, they knew of mine. And so they said they wouldn't play jacks with me, if you remember the little games with the kids and ball. And I said, "Why?" Because I knew I could beat them. I always beat them. So I said, "I'll play left-handed," because I knew I could beat them left-handed. Yeah.
That's funny.
But I said, "I'll play left-handed." "No, we're not playing with you, and you can't play." And I said, "Well, can you tell me why?" And they said, "Our parents said we can't play with you because of what your grandfather did." I almost died on the spot, because I'm thinking, how do they know what my grandfather did?
Yeah.
I don't know what they're talking about. And I said, "I don't know what you mean." They said, "Well, go ask your parents." My grandfather had molested a neighbor when I was in fifth grade. Now, he never got punished for it. I don't mean to talk of the horror, because I really want to talk about the healing part, too, James, more than the victimization.
Yeah,
but the reason my mom and dad divorced when I was 7, 8 years old was because a few years before, when I was in first grade, about 6 years old, my cousin, which was my mom's niece, came to live with us. She was about 14 years old. By the time she was 16, my dad had got her pregnant.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was the last straw with the family. So economics, strictly economics, kept me with my dad.
Oh, gosh.
Now, we were with my mom on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Tuesday, but we officially lived with my dad. So that's how the abuse happened, and my mom never knew about it.
Mm.
But you see, through all that, I don't believe I would be the person I am today, and it would be amiss to tell the victimization part. People ask me, "Well, Marty, just like you asked me, how did you get through your childhood?" Everyone has a different story, James. My story is I would have never got through it except for God. My aunt asked me that once. She said, "Marty, how is it your life is different than my cousin's? And, you know, how did you come out differently?" Because it destroyed my cousin's life. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, "Annie, I can answer it in one word." And I said, "It was God." And my husband often said, he said, "Marty, you had one thread of hope." Especially when he knew my story, but when he read the book, he said, "You had one thread of hope." He said, "And it comes through your story all the time. It was God." And it was, James. My dad did one thing right. He made us go to Sunday school, and we would walk up a little dirt road. I go up there sometimes just for the meaning of it. But we would walk up this dirt road, my brothers and myself, and our little Cocker Spaniel dog that had adopted us and we were allowed to keep would follow us up that hill. And we'd all walk up the hill. The dog, our little dog, Mamie was her name, she would sit outside the church door and wait till we were done Sunday school. And we would go into this little Sunday school. And I can remember the first time that God touched my heart. And he gave me a hope, James. That's the thing. I was 6 years old, 5 or 6 years old, and I can remember the hope that came into my heart. And when the abuse got bad, every Sunday I'd go to this little Sunday school, but there'd always be that hope there. Now, the people weren't always the nicest because they knew our family.
Yeah.
The school teachers that had taught my mom and dad, they know everything in the Little Valley. They knew everything that went on in children, what the experience is, that their identity's already shot. But then you have everyone telling them that, well, if you're, my maiden name was Layton, if you're a Layton, you're not worth anything. I had a seventh grade teacher who used to call out our grades, and he didn't know me. So he got to my name and he said, Layton 98. He said, you must have lucked out or studied awful hard. But he said that in front of the whole class.
Wow.
Now, I had enough gumption in my heart. I knew to keep my mouth shut with him, and I actually was shy back then. But my heart, I said, you old goat, I'll show you how lucky I am.
That's right.
And I will ace every test. And so I did. And
that is amazing, Marcia.
That happened in seventh grade. But in that little church, I found a hope. And I can remember when I was 8 and the abuse had started, we had a guest speaker at our little church, and he invited us to go up. And I wanted to go up so bad, James, but I was shy. Said, God, I go up if my brothers go up. Because anything they did, I would do.
Yeah.
Because if they did it, it had to be right. And so my oldest brother stepped out, and then my next brother followed him, my next brother, then myself. We talked about that all the way home, walking home. Did you feel Jesus come in your heart?
Oh, really, that's so sweet. And love it.
And see, what was so great about this, James, was that this Jesus didn't judge me. This Jesus didn't see me as dirty, wretched. This Jesus didn't make me feel afraid and ashamed, guilty, blame. This God loved me and saw something in me that nobody else did. And that gave me a hope that just propelled me.
Yes.
I did ask God one time when I got older, when I was grown up, I asked him if I wore his angels out. because I come off, sometimes people are surprised. I come off, I don't know, sometimes they say I need a mic or I'm soft-spoken. I'm like, you really need to talk to my husband, or my lawyer, or my kids. Because and in school, they thought that. They never knew what to do with me because I was at the bus stop one time. This kid was bigger than me. I think he was a year or so younger, but he was bigger than me. But I had a cousin that was 3 years younger, and he was real tiny. And this boy would pick on him horribly. I wanted to say something. I thought, no, you'll make it worse for him. But one day he pushed him. I think he pushed him down the ditch.
Oh, my gosh.
And I went over to him and I said, you leave my cousin alone. And he got right in my face. And he made the mistake. He said, make me.
Oh, gosh.
So I did. I beat him up and I drug him to the mud puddle. His mother was on the PTA and I got called in the office.
I love it, Marcia. That's hysterical.
So we just didn't know whether the day would run.
Yeah.
But like I say, you know, there was a lot of good memories and there was a lot of good things, but the abuse was really devastating, and it really does shatter a person. Yeah. And my desire of talking with people, James, is that they know they can heal, that they can go from being abused and from being a victim to being a survivor, to become an overcomer, to become a conqueror and a victor.
Yes.
And then they have life instead of death.
How do you instill that in them? How do you share that with them? Because when someone is in that mentality of being a victim or a survivor, how do you help them navigate to the other side of that?
Well, I made a chart up 3 or 4 years ago because I do seminars and retreats. And I basically hand it out at these seminars and I show them at prison. I take them down the healing journey. And I said, it's not a microwave fix. We live in a microwave world where I have a magnet that says, Lord, I want patience, but I want it right now. Mm. Doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. And I try to tell people, if you have a hip surgery or a knee surgery, you have to go through therapy. You have to go through a healing process. Mm. You don't get out and play baseball the next day. And healing is painful. And I said, you have to deal to heal to feel. They said, well, how did you do it? And I said, well, the thing is we shove it under the rug. And if we're Christians, it's even worse because we say it's under the blood. And I said, but one day God shook my rug. Said, when your rug is shook and all that comes up, you either deal or die.
Yeah.
Because it's that thick. So I tell people through a chart that I made up, and I tell them, first of all, there's different stages. I call it There's the hurt stage, the pain stage, and the brokenness stage, which brokenness slash anger. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, if Mother Teresa got her finger stuck in a car door, it would hurt, it would be painful, and she would not do that again. And I don't care if she's Mother Teresa, it would hurt. There's an immediate anger when you feel any kind of hurt, physical, emotional, sexual, any kind of abuse. You feel hurt, you feel pain, and you feel anger. And you really have no choice with those three. Now, what happens with that? When you're hurt, you become an abused person.
Yeah.
And when you're in pain, you become a victim. And then through the brokenness and anger, you either survive it or die. You're in a car accident and you're hurt real bad, you die. It's the same way the statistics for suicide is terrible with abuse. And even with our teenagers, we know that the third highest cause of death in teenagers is suicide. Mm-hmm. So you can just survive, but that's where you stay. And the reason people get stuck there, I believe, James, is that you go from the initial anger to grab and hold onto anger as a cloak of comfort. Mm-hmm. That sounds like an oxymoron, but basically, how many people have never said, I have a right to be angry? We've all said, I have a right to be angry. And I tell people, you do. But the question is do you want to live there? Or you want to hold on to it, or do you want to let it go? Mm-hmm. If you hang on to the anger, you will become a revenger. You may not revenge other people. You might be like me. You might be one of those ones who direct it inward instead of outward.
But it would still have to come out somewhere, yeah.
It will come out or it will go in. But anger is like a bullet. It'll ricochet through you. But people stay under that anger as a cloak of comfort because it empowers them. But it's the wrong power. And it's like a bullet inside of you that you want to shoot out, but instead it ricochets inside and destroys you. If you decide to give up the anger, you will become an overcomer. But that's still not total victory. So then the next question, and no one likes this, and you're a counselor, so you know that. The next thing is do you want to choose unforgiveness or do you want to choose forgiveness?
And that's such a powerful question because many people don't realize it is a choice. Forgiveness or unforgiveness is a choice.
And I don't believe you can even take a person to that stage. I get so frustrated when people say, well, you just got to forgive them and get over it. And I'm like, they haven't dealt with their hurt. You got to deal with the hurt. You got to deal with the pain. And then you got to deal with the anger before you even take them to forgiveness.
Yeah.
Then you got to explain to them. You really got to explain to them what is forgiveness and what is not forgiveness. And I deal with this in the prisons all the time. I said, just because you're forgiven by God or others, and whether you are or aren't, you have to understand you still have an accountability for what you've done.
Yes.
Forgiveness doesn't release you from the debt. It makes you accountable still for the debt. It just forgives you of the debt. For example, if I loan you $100, it's on my neck all the time. When's he going to pay me back? When's he going to pay me back? It's a debt you owe me. Mm-hmm. So I finally get to where I'm not messing with this anymore. I'm just going to forgive him of the debt. You still have an accountability to get your finances together and pay that debt. But basically, I've forgiven you. I'm not holding you for that. The debt to me, to explain a little better, the debt that was owed to me from my father was, the Bible says that a millstone should have been cast around his neck and he should have been thrown into the ocean. That's what the Bible says should be done to people that hurt children. So that is the debt that my dad owed me. But I forgave him of that debt. But I didn't have to release him of the accountability. See, forgiving someone doesn't mean that what they did is okay now.
Correct. Yes.
And that has to be taught to people because it's not taught to them. And because they feel like, well, if I forgive them, then they get off easy and I can't do that. So they need to know that it frees them more than even frees the perpetrator.
Yes, it releases them. Yes, it does.
It does. And once you release that, you become a conqueror. If you hold on to unforgiveness, it will make you a retaliator. It'll enter every relationship you're in.
I really like those stages that you discussed a few minutes ago, and then obviously this last stage as well. But I think that's so powerful because if someone can see what potential stage they're in and perhaps what are the symptoms they demonstrate or the mentality that they have, I think it really helps them see, well, there is another side to this. There is another step that I can go to. And as they are aware of that and can really compartmentalize that, literally see it on a piece of paper, it helps them say, well, I can get to the other side. I can go to this next step. I'm stuck in this step right now and I don't want to be. So there's another step I can take. And there's another one beyond that. So I think that's absolutely wonderful that you were able to come up with these steps.
Yeah, and that's what I ask him, James. I say, I hold the chart up and I go down it and I say, now, You look at this and you decide, you don't have to tell me, where are you stuck? Mm-hmm. And I've met people that are stuck at the hurt stage. They're nowhere near even being a survivor because they've never dealt with the hurt and pain that they've went through, regardless of whether it's child sexual abuse or domestic abuse. I use this even on a daily basis. You know, when that person cuts you off in road rage and gives you some hand gestures and all of a sudden you're like, really? And you know, and you start feeling that hurt, pain, anger. I mean, it's a sequence, whether we stick our finger in the door or whether someone hurts us emotionally. And people say, well, weren't you say give it up? Where do you give it up to? Mm-hmm. And I said, my experience, I don't know that I could have ever done that myself. I don't think people ask me what empowers me. And it is the love of God. Mm. And I say that there's power in that, and people need to know that they matter to God. Now, God and I had a real long talk one time as an adult. He kept tugging at my heart and asked me what was bothering. You have to understand, James, I had walked with God a long time. God kept tugging at my heart like he had many years. I had walked with him. He said, why don't you tell me what's bothering you? And he also had showed my heart that, am I God enough to bring you out of your childhood, but not God enough to heal you from it?
Wow.
And that's when he shook my rug. He started to get me to deal with it. And this particular time, he said, why don't you tell me what's bothering you? And I said, Lord, I want to know. And I started out real pious, real respectful.
I think we've all done that.
And then the hillbilly Marty came to light, you know, that when they drug the kid through the mud puddle and everything, that quiet one just disappeared. I don't know, just got swallowed up. But I said, where were you? Where were you when I was being abused? I had already given you my heart. So where were you? And I got sarcastic, and he didn't strike me dead with lightning.
He's big enough to hear that. Yeah.
And I said, God, where were you? I said, I give my heart to you. I said, and yet this continued. I said, did I wear my angels out? Did you have to keep calling angels? I said, I know I was I could be a roughie. Maybe I wore them out. And then I got even more direct, and I said, and where were you? Where were you? And I feel like that day was so powerful in my life. And I feel like God did that. My mom used to do a whistle with her fingers when she calls for supper. Uh-huh. That's kind of the hillbilly dinner bell, you know. But, you know, I felt like God whistled for all those angels I had worn out and reminded him of. And I could just feel the presence in the room. And then he spoke to my heart and he said, every time you cried, he said, your angels cried with you. Every time you cried, I cried with you. He said, but your dad had a power of choice, and I couldn't take the power of choice from him, or I'd have to rewrite the book. Every person, James, has a power of choice.
Yes, they do.
He said, but I never left you. I never left you, and neither did your angels. And I saw a different side of God that I had ever seen, and I saw a heart of God. And it was good that I had got to that part of my healing, because I had a lot of anger towards God, even though I had walked with him for years. And it was very healing to give him my anger. So that's what I tell people. I said, you give God your hurt and you give him your pain. And it's a choice. You don't have to.
Well, I think just like you said, when he told you that your dad had that choice, that other side of the coin is you have a choice too, to either give it to God or to forgive or to become an overcomer. It's the same type of thing. That free will can go in many different directions.
Yeah, you have a choice at every stage. You can stay in your hurt. You can stay in your pain. I tell them that in prison. You can stay in your anger. You can say you have a right to be angry. I'm not going to devalue that. It is true. Mm-hmm. You have a right to be angry. I told them at the prison I went to, it was a state prison last Wednesday. I said, I'm going to be honest with you. I said, I have a right to be a serial murderer if I want to be.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
But I said, that's not what we do. I said, that's not the life I wanted. That's not the life you want. Choose if you want to forgive. Some people can get to the anger stage. They have a hard time there. But even a lot of it got past that. But that unforgiven forgiveness is a real hard one. If people do forgive, they will go on to be helpful to others, to themselves. If they hold on to unforgiveness, they will hurt themselves or others. And it does pop up in their relationships. Because what happens if you stay in that hurting mentality that now you're hurting yourself or others, it's all because of control. And if you go the other direction, it's surrender. Now, it's very hard to tell a victim that full surrender brings full victory, but it does.
Because it doesn't make sense, yeah, of course.
You're asking them to give up the very thing that they feel they survived. Mm-hmm. Because anger, unforgiveness, and hurt and control makes them feel empowered.
Yes.
But it's the wrong kind of power. It's the kind that will... It's like a firecracker and it backfires on you.
You have great analogies, Marty. You really do. The things that you've said, I can really see how your message of hope can really make sense for people. I mean, such practical analogies and ways in which people can reframe this and really hear it. And I think it's such a powerful gift that you have.
Well, thank you. Really, when I go into the different venues, probably the one that touches my heart the most is the prisoners. And last week, different ones stood up. After I was done, I opened it up to the prisoners. Like I say, this was a state prison. There was probably over 50 men, and there was probably over 50 staff. The head of the prison, different ones were there. Different ones thanked me for coming. And the one gentleman, it was kind of amazing. He stood up and he said, "I really want to apologize for all you went through." And I know people, you can't just be naive going in there. I mean, people can say one thing and sure, they're not always sincere. I'm not naive enough to not know that. But when I was done, usually I don't know, but I was told that that man tells everyone that he's in on drugs and addiction, but he's really in because he molested his stepdaughters. Mm. He was apologizing to me, and I really felt he was sincere, but he wasn't really apologizing to me because I believe he finally got, that's the other thing the purpose of the book does. If an abused person reads it, it'll validate them. It'll help them know that what they went through and what they're feeling is completely normal and yeah, that they can heal from it. If you don't understand abuse, you will understand it when you're done reading. And it's not about the book, it's about the message. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is that even the abusers who read it, or like I say, in prison that hear the story, they understand. I think they finally get the devastation that they caused, because my dad, he minimized it. And I tell him that in prison too. I says, you got the wrong toolbox. Yeah. Look in your toolbox. What are you using? Denial, minimization, justification, manipulation, intimidation. I said, they won't work. You may try to survive with them, but they won't work.
Mm-hmm. Well, Marty, unfortunately, our time is up. I would love to spend more time talking with you about this, but I'm so grateful for all the lessons that you've taught my listeners. You've taught me all your wisdom, all your insights, your story of hope. I want to just thank you so much for being on my show.
Well, I thank you, James. I really do. And my prayer is that it helps others start the healing journey. You don't have to go from start to finish in a day, but take someone's hand. Know that God loves you. And I always tell them this in prison. Know that you matter. Know that you matter, because you really do.
Yeah, that's powerful. Well, Marty or Marcia, if people would like to find more information about you online, where would they find your information?
The best place to find is you can go to my website, which is marciabarth.com, MarciaBarth.com. I have blogs there. I have the event page. I have the information about the book. You can buy the book on my page. It can be bought through Amazon. Mm-hmm. I can give them a signed copy if they buy it. You know, a lot of people like a signed copy.
Oh, that's so neat. Wonderful.
So they can buy it right from the website. They can Google The Shattering and go to my Facebook. I put a lot of things on my Facebook. They can follow me on Facebook if they want. And they can contact me at any of those. If they have any questions, they can contact me through my website. They can contact me through Facebook, through The Shattering page. And I'd be glad to guide them and lead them in any way that I could, that they can know that they can live a victorious life.
That's wonderful. Marcia, once again, thank you so much for being on my show today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, James. It's such a pleasure. And God bless you in all you do.
Thank you. I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast through whichever podcast portal you joined with me. If you're using iTunes and you like what you hear, please rate this podcast as well as leave your comments on the iTunes podcast page. Also, please visit my website where you may see all my YouTube episodes and published articles I've written for you. You may also enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created, where you can take self-directed courses which are designed for successful people just like you. You may find all this information at jamesmillerlifeology.com. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this podcast episode today. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to talking to you very soon.